What a joy to be exploring the lives of twins here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and if you're a twin or a parent of twins, we want to hear from you this hour. First, some context. A study came out earlier this year that found twin births are booming. About 1.6 million twins are born each year worldwide. More twins are populating our planet than ever before. That's from the journal Human Reproduction, helping us out with the record books there. What is your connection to the life of twins? It's 800-642-1234. Joan Friedman is a psychotherapist and author of several books on the psychology and emotions of twins. She's a twin herself and the mother of twins. Joan, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Okay, thank you so much. Nice to be here, Kate. Thanks.
Yeah, so start with just what's going on here. Why are more twins being born now than ever before? What is behind this increase?
Well, this rate has been sort of going up, and there's two main reasons. One is the infertility techniques like IVF, people needing help getting pregnant. And the other part is that older women, like 35, 40s, they're delaying childbirth. And so oftentimes that will give you more chances to have most likely fraternal twins because there is a hyperovulation in terms of one or more eggs dropping during a menstrual cycle. So it does have to do with older women who've delayed childbearing who want to have twins or want to have children and they end up with twins.
People often say, well, twins, you know, they run in my family. How is that true and not true? How is it that genetics are possible and not possible in that saying?
Well, I'm not a scientist, so I can only tell you what I've heard. Mm-hmm. But identical twins seem to be random in the sense that it's been a steady birth rate. Like it's usually one in a 250 births. And that's kind of been a consistent statistic. But fraternal twins, of course, their rate's going up for the reasons I already mentioned. But they do think that there's some genetic connection between if your mother had fraternal twins, you may have a higher chance of having them. But I can't bear that out statistically.
And you say that fraternal twins are more common than identical twins. Is mm-hmm. that right?
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
So when you look at twins, and certainly it's been a central part of your own life and also your own practice with patients, what are some observations that you make that set twins apart?
Well, of course, I could go on forever about this, but I will only tell you a few things. I have to sort of, there's a caveat to my work. I definitely have a practice where twins find me who are having trouble with their relationship. These are adult twins or parents of twins that have adolescent twins or maybe even younger twins who aren't getting along. So I have I present a skewed perspective of some of these problems and issues, but I have to say, so people always accuse me, you're so negative, but it's because I'm working with this population. I do think the majority of twins do get along. However, for those who don't, there are very few people who can sort of specialize in this niche. And parents often feel that they're failures if their twins don't get along. You know, they are in this kind of societal idea of our culture that twins are best friends and they're soulmates and they have ESP and, you know, they're never alone and they're so lucky. So if their twins start having problems, what have we done? We've done something wrong. So I think it depends on whether I'm helping parents of twins or adult twins, but I think parents of twins have the most difficulty, I think, understanding that the twin bond is a comforting bond as opposed to a developmental bond, meaning that parents often feel in some way left out by their twins because the twins are together, they play together, they fight a lot together. And parents need to work at really trying to establish a one-to-one connection with each child because it's basically the parent-child connection is much more important developmentally than the twin bond. So this is often misconstrued. When I started running groups for parents of twins, I would introduce this notion that you really have to really try to find time to spend one-on-one time with each twin as much as you can. Everybody's circumstances are different. And everyone said, oh no, we can't do that. They cry. They don't want to be separated. They want to be together. Our grandparents think that that's a terrible idea. What are you saying? What are you doing? So it's been a very difficult concept for me to try to share and to try to help people understand that it is so much more important that twins are not raised by a surrogate parent of the same age, but really raised by the parent who is the most important person in that child's life.
And who sees their individuality in the person they are at heart.
Exactly. Yes.
We're talking with Joan Friedman, who's a psychotherapist, author of several books on the emotions of twins, a twin herself, and the mother of twins. You can join in. Are you one? What is your experience like growing up as part of a pair? What are the benefits? What are the challenges of life as a twin? Join in at 800-642-1234. On the comforting bond that you talked about there, as you mentioned, you know, we've always split up our twins into different classrooms, but I heard of twins becoming dependent on one another in schooling. And there was this one instance when my twins were in 4K and one of my twins heard the other crying in the classroom across the hall and said, can I go comfort my twin? And the teacher, you know, totally obliged to that request. And that was that. But what do you see in twin classroom experiences?
Well, I think more and more people hopefully are becoming enlightened about that they have to be aware of what their local school policy is. Because if their kids are going to kindergarten and all of a sudden they get there and they say these children have to be split up, not all twin pairs are ready to be separated. Separation, just like for singletons, has to be handled well, it has to be talked about, it has to be, you know, introduced in a really positive way, because schools have gotten a very bad rap being told that, oh my God, you can't separate my twins, they're going to be traumatized. But the traumatization comes with parents being unaware of school policy in terms of separation and also helping their twins get ready for this separation. But I'm glad to hear that you have your children in separate classes. And I love that idea, no matter if they're identical or they're fraternal, because I think twins just don't have enough of their own separate, unique opportunities to be alone. They, you know, so they would have their own classroom, their own friends, their own projects, their own homework. They have to spend so much time at home with their siblings. And having time away is so wonderful. And I've heard so often that twins have a lot of difficulty, some twins have difficulty making friendships because other children see them as a couple. They feel like they don't need any other friends. It's hard to kind of interject yourself and become sort of that third person. And a lot of children aren't interested in doing that. And as a result, a lot of twins become friendly with the other twin pairs in the classroom or in the school because that's who they can relate to the best. But I think because the twinship and friendships are so important in those latency age years, like 6, 7, and 8, all those peer relationships have so much influence, far, far more important in some way than what's going on at home. And without having any introduction to separate experiences, it's very hard for twins to make friends.
Psychotherapist Joan Friedman with us focuses her research on the lives of twins. Are you parenting twins? How have you navigated the unique aspects of raising two children the same age at the same time? I'll take a stab at that answer. Some days better than others. Oh, my goodness. Have you or someone you know struggled with individuality because of being a twin? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're discussing the lives of twins on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The global rate of twin births has risen by a third since the 80s, and researchers are pointing to the growing use of fertility treatments as probably the biggest factor. Also, we're putting off babies until later in life, the old advanced maternal age, as the docs like to call it. By the way, how did you decide on names for your twins? We have psychotherapist and twin expert Joan Friedman with us for the hour. Let's bring in the story of Eric in Hazel Green. Hi, Eric. What would you like to add?
I was born a twin at 58 years ago, but my twin brother passed away at birth, and I've always kind of felt like I've been missing something, and I'm just curious if I'm missing something because I know I had a twin, or is there just something, am I wired to be missing someone?
Oh, Eric, thank you for sharing that. Joan, have you heard that before? What is Eric feeling?
Yes, I have heard that before. Unfortunately, I don't have any scientific evidence, but only anecdotal. I have been very involved. There's a support group called Twinless Twins, and they actually have, they run support groups, and they have a support group just for people such as Eric who had that experience. And there are also a few books written about that experience as well. And, you know, it would seem to make sense. I mean, it's like physiologically, biologically, you know, you're in a womb with, you know, your twin for such a long time that there just seems to be that there would be some sort of connection for some people, and but maybe not for others. So I do think it's an important thing to consider, because I think it's resonated with some people. And I think it also brings up an interesting point that I've also heard that adults like Eric haven't heard until they were way, way older, that they were in this situation. Their parents haven't told them that maybe they were a twin, or that one was stillborn, or one died, you know, in the womb. And so they lose out on this knowledge that may have contributed to some of their important emotional makeup. So I would urge parents to be as truthful as you can in an age-appropriate manner, if this subject comes up, or maybe make the subject come up rather than putting it under the rug as being unimportant, because maybe it will have an impact on a child, and it will make some sense to them as they grow up and work through some of their emotional issues.
Try not to suppress those emotions if they do come up, and keep talking about it, perhaps.
Yeah, right.
Let's go to Steve now in Lake Geneva. Steve, hi. What is your situation with twins?
Well, not quite a situation. I just have a couple quick questions. What can parents do to prevent or discourage twins from developing opposing personalities, what could be described as dysfunctional natures? For instance, one child becomes the virtuous child, the other becomes the troubled, difficult child. How often does this seem to occur, and why? What might be the causes of this type of opposing nature?
Thank you, Steve. Yes, Joan.
I know you're talking about a dynamic, sort of like the good twin and the bad twin. So again, I don't know your specifically unique situations, but how I've understood that this can happen is that it goes back to each of those twins' personalities and how mom and dad fit into that or don't fit into that. I talk a lot about this in my first book, Emotionally Healthy Twins, that there's something really important about a maternal infant fit. And lots of times you're going to be more drawn toward the extrovert or more drawn toward the twin that's athletic. So you end up looking for or finding more identification with traits in that particular child that fit with who you are or how you think a child should be. And that's what's so important with twins, is working on getting to know each of them as individuals. Another important thing is, you know, I have five children and I love them all, but I do not love them all the same. And I didn't ever want to love them all the same, because that would have prevented me from really getting into each of their personalities and temperaments, and for me to find my way into my connection with each one of them. So oftentimes, if parents are feeling guilty about having preferences or really preferring one twin over the other, just in terms of how you get along with that child, it's important not to put those things under the rug, and you're certainly not going to share them with the child. But if you feel that in yourself, instead of feeling bad and guilty about it, really keep it in your consciousness and work hard to find a way to relate to that child who to you is maybe not as good as the other one, or who's behaving badly, or is becoming labeled as the bad twin, because that's certainly something you want to try to nip in the bud sooner rather than later.
Along the lines of individuality, I know that I put convenience and efficiency sometimes above the own child's preferences, like putting them in the same sporting thing or the same activity. When one twin really wants to do it, the other twin is just like, not really. But I'm doing it for the convenience factor. How do you approach that?
Well, it's a reality, and it's very, very difficult with terms of time and women working and families being so busy. But I really do stress the importance of trying to give each twin a specific activity away from his or her sibling, just because they have the experience of the other one who doesn't want to do it as much feels dragged along. Mm-hmm. And so it's not so much fun for him, especially if he just feels that he has to be there. He has to go because his brother or sister is going. So I think as twins get older and you really begin to see some divergence in their interests or in their skills, if you could find a way just to have one activity or one after school event or one thing on a Saturday where they can both be doing what they prefer to be doing, it helps so much with individuality. It helps so much with social skills. And it also helps with this idea that I talk about, that life is not fair and twins are not equal. And I've had so many moms call me and dads saying one child made the star hockey team, the other one did not. So should we put both back in the less team? How can we help the child who didn't make the team as his brother did be okay with the discrepancy? And it is very difficult for parents of twins to really address this issue. But it's so very important, because I can only tell you that the adult twins I treat, whose parents were not able to really handle the inequality that happens with all twins, that they grow up, and when one twin gets something that the other one doesn't, there's a complete breakdown in their connection. Hmm. And this happens often when one twin has a romantic relationship and the other one doesn't, because that's sort of the hallmark of things being very different. So when that's different and the twinship has never been able to handle differences, the twins don't learn to mitigate differences and conflict, and there's a huge meltdown, and it's very problematic.
We're going to get to romantic relationships in just a bit, but I do want to bring in Sandra Chow in Menominee Falls. Sandra Chow, go ahead with your story.
Hi there. My twins fought constantly from day one. In fact, before they were born, they had videos of them, and my twins were 7'10" and 7'18 pounds and 21
wow.
and 22 inches long. So one twin sat on the other one's head. There was no, I mean, you know, that was just how they were forming because they were so big. So they fought from day one. And finally, I just couldn't take it anymore. And they were about 10 years old. And the one twin was crying, the one who sat on the other one's head, the one who was sat on was always like fighting with the other one. So the one was crying, and she said Miley hit her and was fighting with her. And I was having such a rough day with them, and I said, that's it, Miley. You're going to get a spanking. And this was 42 years ago. I'm going to spank you, and you'll see what it feels like for Miley, for Malia. And Malia stopped crying, stared at me, and said, mind your own business. You're just the mom.
We're going to get back to this story in just a moment, as we have twin expert and psychotherapist Joan Friedman helping us understand the lives of twins, twin herself. Do you have twins in your family? What have you noticed about their similarities, their differences over the years? What do you do about punishing twins? When one gets in trouble, the other doesn't. Join in 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with Joan Friedman right after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're exchanging stories about twins this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So my twins were born full term, 38 weeks. They each weighed a little over 6 pounds. And in Louisiana, where premature birth rates are about the worst in the nation, there was a flood of nurses and doctors stood standing room only in the OR, which is where twins are born these days, to witness a full-term twin birth. They all had asked for my permission to be in there, and the prevailing sentiment was it was so rare to see this. What is your story about having twins? Where are they today? And the heartbreak, what is it like when one twin passes? 800-642-1234. We have psychotherapist Joan Friedman, who researches twins and is with us for the hour. Joan, we had heard from Sandra Chow, who had said, you know, these twin feuds, they might be, you know, at loggerheads with each other through life, but they really present a united front when faced with an authority figure. What are your insights on that allegiance and that hierarchy?
Well, Sandra's call brought up some interesting issues. One is how twins get labeled. They get labeled even in utero. I mean, she was very concerned about how they were placed inside and how they came out the same way. And so I think these labels can be very pernicious as children get older, because that's what everyone says. Oh, she's extroverted. She's athletic. She's shy. And these labels get stuck, and it doesn't allow the outside people to really get to know who each one of them is, because they're identified by a label. And it's a very limiting way that their individuality can also begin to shine through. But she also did bring up this idea that she's basically overwhelmed by them, by her children having fought so often. And I've heard this a lot. And in response, I think when one of the daughters said, you know, sort of, you know, get out of here, you're only the mom. It's those twins that are too powerful together. It's called their, you know, it's too much togetherness, or they have the power of two, that they end up, as you say, in a united front where they're ending up sort of taking control and being in charge. Because at that point, the parent has sort of lost charge of what he or she might be needing to do, because there is so much of a mighty force when two kids take this united front against you.
And so you see that teaming up. How can you start to kind of gently pull that apart to be able to make those, you know, distinctions of saying you are an individual? What are some of those first steps?
Well, one of the very first steps you can do, and I write about this in my book, is you have to start, even before the twins are born, you try to start mentalizing them as two separate individuals. They happen to be two unique babies that are born at the same time. And I often talk to parents about singing happy birthday twice, getting their own birthday cake, maybe just having an inexpensive single stroller so you don't have to go out all the time with both of them. But, and also maybe you can have a few toys that they don't have to share. I mean, twins have to share everything. It's they share their parents, they share love, they share attention, they share time. So in some way, teaching twins not to share can give them more of an idea of a sense of being separate and a sense of being individuals. So you have to start really small and really early. Like you have one or two toys that's labeled with their names or it's a different color. And you don't have to share that toy. This is yours. And even having a few drawers. Parents often say, like, they mix all their clothes and this and that. But if they have separate drawers, it's also something that belongs to them individually. Also, I think what parents forget to do is they forget to take single photographs of each child. Normally they go through and there's tons of the children together and they're so cute and they're adorable. But if you ever need to have a just one picture of each one, you've got to really put one out, a single photo, so that that child sees himself as a singleton at times, not just a part of a pair all the time. So these are like funny things that you can do, but they help, you know, promote a sense of everyone in the family trying to focus on creating some individuality for each of them, which I think, you know, helps to minimize the fighting, even though the fighting's going to happen no matter what.
Yeah, helpful tips. Thank you. Let's go to Paul now in Boyceville. Paul, hi.
Hello.
Hi, what is the story of you and your twin?
Well, first of all, I'm in a subcategory of Irish twin, which is something quite different. Irish kids are rough and tumble. And my twin brother and I were rough and tumble all our lives. When we were small, they could start a fight immediately by asking, which one of you twins is the strongest? Immediately, the fight would break out. My twin brother and I were 82 years of age, and he passed just 3 weeks ago.
I'm sorry.
And it was both very heartbreaking, but also a relief, because he should have died many times over the years and didn't. So it was an ending of the twinship. Elvis Presley was a twin. A lot of people don't know that. He lost his twin brother at birth. My twin brother and I obviously were identical twins, and then he had a set of identical twins as well. Named him Peter and Paul, as we were Peter and Paul, which created lots of confusion over our lifetime. I don't know what else to say, except we were directly responsible for all osteopaths to be kicked out of the River Falls, Wisconsin hospital. It was quite an event when we were born, made the front page in the local newspaper. The doctors, the MDs, became upset because an osteopath had delivered us. And then they barred him from the hospital as a result. And so we were controversial right from get-go. Had lots of fun with my twin brother, loved my twin brother. We both claimed the other one was the evil twin and we were the good twin.
Well, Paul, let's get some perspective from Joan Friedman and the loss of a twin.
I loved hearing Paul's story. And what I loved about it is that he, again, felt that it was something, even though he's sorrowful and upset, he can understand that for his brother, it's a relief that he's no longer suffering. Twins really go through a very traumatic process when they lose their twin. And many people don't understand this. And oftentimes, twin who's lost a twin do not feel that they're not getting the kind of support they need from their families, because the grief process is taking longer than they would have imagined someone else going through grief. But when a twin loses a twin, oftentimes they feel as if they've lost half of themselves. They've lost an identity. If I'm not a twin, who am I? They feel like this, their twin complemented them, like they had certain strengths, their twin had other strengths, and together they were a very strong dyadic unit that was sort of a real good force in the world. So a loss of the twin is much more than you might have with a different age sibling, because your relationship all through your life has been so incredibly different, maybe difficult, but you do feel a tremendous sense of loss of your own self and your own identity that you probably would not feel if you lost a sibling.
Paul, thank you for calling, and so sorry about your recent loss. We're talking with Joan Friedman, who is a psychotherapist and the author of several books on twins. You can join in with your story, your questions about raising twins, 800-642-1234. Brittany now is joining us from Erin. Hi, Brittany.
Hi.
You have two sets
Thanks
of twins.
I do. They're 15 months apart.
Oh, goodness.
And yes, and they are in first and second grade currently, and we had intended to separate them in school their whole school career, but it didn't work out that way because we moved a lot. So this is the first year the older twins are separated, and they don't have that twin bond like the other set of twins do, and the one is not doing well socially. And I'm trying my best to help in any kind of way, but I wondered if, your caller had any suggestions on that, because we're struggling.
Brittany, thank you. Joan, what would you say?
Yeah, this is, so is the one, I want to see if I understand this correct. So the one who's struggling, they are in separate classes. Is that correct, Brittany?
Correct. For the first time.
Okay, and they're seven, six, how old?
That's eight.
They're eight, okay. Again, I have to try to tell you not to worry. This is not an unusual turn of events for twins who've not been separated before. And there certainly is a learning curve, and there's usually a longer learning curve for one or for the other. You have to stay strong with the one who's not doing well, and be very encouraging, letting him know that things will get better. You also might want to try to make some play dates for him, away from his brother. Like, if you can have someone else take care of his brother, you probably can't, but maybe you can find a way to have him have his own play date. You can have his twin also have a play date, so there's a foursome and not a threesome. But finding a way to encourage him to feel more comfortable. Also, I don't know if there's any sort of activity that he likes to do, if there was anything you could involve him in so he could have some more exposure to other children. But I think it's not an uncommon situation. He's just got to find his way. If he's relied on his twin for his social skills up until this point, then it's going to be hard for him initially, but he'll gradually get there. And I think you need to not worry, and just to encourage him and to see whatever you can do to facilitate any kind of alliance with some other friends, maybe in his classroom, to see how you can help him feel a little bit more connected.
Brittany, I'm wondering, how do the two sets of twins interact with each other? They're so close in age. Do they sometimes, kind of function as like quads?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. They are all friends with each other. They pair off in different pairs because they're boy-girl set each pair.
Okay.
So sometimes it's the girl, sometimes boy, sometimes they alternate. And they all have the same interest because they're all relatively the same age. So it's when we have friends over, it might be one child's friend, but all five of them are playing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to separate that because they're all the same age. They all want to do the same things. So it's kind of a challenge on that aspect.
Seems like they're really moving as a unit, Joan.
Yeah, a big one.
Yes.
Brittany, is there any way you could spend like some alone time with him at home? Since he seems
we've
to
been
be
working on that, but that's
match.
We do. I'm working on having each kid have their own activity this year, but I'm doing them one at a time because logistically that's just easier. So, right. And then we try to do one-on-one time with, you know, just me, just dad. But again, that takes a lot of time to do it, you know, eight times. So it's something we try to do, but it's not always logistically easy.
Well, of course, but you know, you can understand then why the one twin might be struggling. I mean, he's so accustomed to having this built-in social group. Now he has to, you know, make his own social group, and he's going to be developing those skills, but he's struggling because he hasn't had to do this before. But he will, but I can understand that. I mean, he's sort of stepped into this ready-made situation at home where he just fits in and plays and has a wonderful time. And he's on his own in the classroom, and that's, it's good for him to eventually learn how to handle himself in that situation, even though he's struggling right now.
Brittany, thank you so much. Psychotherapist Joan Friedman giving us a fuller picture of the life of twins. We'll pick this up back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. It's the Lives of Twins on the morning show. I'm Kedar Chirkent. We have psychotherapist Joan Friedman, whose expertise is in twins, with us for about nine more minutes. Let's go to Nikki in Delavan. Nikki, hi. What is your situation with twins? Oh, and we don't have Nikki. How about Tiffany in Portage? Tiffany, hi. Tiffany, are you there?
Yep, I am.
You have twin boys who are four, is that right?
I do.
What is going on with those four-year-olds?
So if anybody has ever seen Dennis the Menace with Walter Matthau, one of my boys decides to throw himself down on the pavement a lot, and he'll do it in Walmart, and he will do it at the kitchen table, and he'll just slink down and kind of play dead. And I don't know how to get him to stop doing that. He does it for attention and has kind of decided to be the one that goes towards getting the negative attention. And my other twin has a tendency to be more patient and a little bit less naughty. And so I'm kind of wondering, seeing as he does this in Walmart all the time, how to get him to stop throwing those temper tantrums.
Joan, what about those tantrums?
I am not great at the discipline information. I think I'd be more interested in sort of the dynamic between the child who's the more of the caretaker versus the one who's having more of a difficulty. I want to look at the dynamic in between the twins, maybe more than sort of focusing on his behavior. Since he is getting a lot of negative attention with this behavior, is his twin, who seems more calm and caring, getting a lot of attention for being that way? And so he feels that he has to do the opposite in order to get what he needs. I talk a lot about this dynamic cared for twin in my other book, my second book, The Same But Different. It's a very interesting dynamic that happens between twins, and it happens very early. And the caretaking role is assumed by one, and the other one is being cared for. But the cared for twin often is resentful that they're being sort of superseded or cared about by this other twin. So I would want you to sort of look at the dynamic between the two of them to see if there's something that you're unknowingly reinforcing or something that's going on where he feels the other one's getting more attention. Because there's something causing him to be in this realm of getting this very big negative attention getting behavior by throwing himself on the floor. So I would ask you to see or look and figure out if there's anything in the twin dynamic that you think is causing that to happen now.
Tiffany, thank you. Larry now in Portage is with us. Larry, hi.
Hi. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, yes. You can share with your twin. Uh-huh.
Well, I have a kind of an atypical twin experience that rarely gets talked about. My brother was born severely disabled and cognitively and physically disabled. And my mother, it was very hard on me because I was the caregiver to my brother through school. I had to toilet him. And my mother would, every milestone, every achievement that I made was overshadowed by her grief that my brother didn't meet the same milestone. Mm. So, you know, I guess my caution to parents is that they're individuals, and she tried to make us the same, even though we were really not the same, and it had a very negative impact on me. So I just wanted to share that.
Joan, what would you extend there with Larry's story?
Yeah, Larry, I've heard this story before, and it's so tragic. I mean, for you and the family, and you're absolutely right. It's so difficult with twins, especially when there's one so compromised like your brother was, for a family to be able to celebrate your accomplishments and your accolades and your skills while there's another child who's not capable of probably accomplishing any of those things. And it's a very tragic but beautiful example of the importance of parents trying to see twins as individuals so that you can treat each one accordingly and not be worried about one overshadowing the other, but dealing with that inequality, which of course in your case was vast. But thank you for sharing that story. I have heard it before, and I know it's very heart-wrenching.
Larry, thank you. We only have a minute or so left here. Joan, what do you think will happen in the future of twin research and the psychological exploration of twins? Where do you want to see it go?
Well, the interesting things going on in twin research now is the study of epigenetics. So epigenetics means that there's a cellular sort of a cellular development, and each twin has different epigenetics. I mean, if you know, I grew up going, oh, you're identical, you have the same DNA. But there's interesting studies now. Why does one identical twin get cancer? Why does one get Parkinson's? Why does one get diabetes? You would assume if they're genetically identical that they both would have the disease. So the epigenetic studies that are coming out now, which is all about cellular mutation, which can take place in the womb and then outside of it, is a fascinating study to think about. But in terms of the emotional parts of the study of twins, I think the psychology continues to be the same, as you mentioned so often. It's like focusing on individuality and helping twins and parents of twins do what they can to help promote a healthy individuation in their twins.
Joan, thank you for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. It's been wonderful. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Joan Friedman is a psychotherapist, author of several books about the psychology and emotions of twins, a twin herself, the mother of twins. I'm Kate Archer Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.